This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. My pleasure to be with you. Hello, JB. Hello, Kirk.
Shalom. How's it going?
Yeah. Thank you, JB, for calling in on the host line so we can have a show. I finally figured out why I can't use it. I'm here in the Bahamas, and they will not accept an 800 call. And that's, you know, it's an 844 number, which is a toll-free number that you get when you have the premium Blog Talk Radio account. They won't accept a call on that line from out of the country. Wow. So there is my dilemma. So somehow, some way, I'll try to get this direct connect thing to work. But right now, we're just going on as we had before, and I appreciate you guys doing this. The most interesting thing in the news is a number of things. One is the U.S. is gloating about killing Ebrahim Baghdadi. And last night I did something I haven't done for a very long time. I went to a party, and the two hosts of the party, it was a staff party for the island I'm on here in the Bahamas, and I've been here so long, and it probably doesn't come across when we do these shows, but just in, you know, ordinary life, I like to engage with the people. So everybody that works the dock, everybody that does anything from the gardeners on up, I've gotten to know, spend time and talk with. And so they had a staff party last night. And, well, they invited Leigh and I to the staff party. And we had a real love ball. So that was something I haven't done in a while. And while I was there, two of the senior members of the staff were talking about Trump bragging about Baghdadi cowering and crying like a baby. That just isn't the way. If you're going to deal with a religious leader, that's saying that kind of stuff is stupid. It makes it look like, you know, you're the big guy. And yet you didn't do anything. You just signed an order that said your troops could go and kill him.
No more. It's like when Obama bragged about killing bin Laden.
Right. Mm-hmm. You just say very little. Every time you kill a religious zealot, you manufacture 100 more. And if you brag about it, you manufacture 1,000 more. The only thing you can do here is to say, this man prized himself as being a religious leader of the Islamic State, and yet under his dominion, thousands of little girls were sold into sex slavery. Hundreds of thousands of people were ousted from their home, and tens of thousands were killed. This is a very, very bad man. And while they may replace him tomorrow, the fact is that some Americans risked their lives to make certain that the man who inspired this kind of carnage against little girls is no longer alive. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. That would have been
explain
great.
Why you did it and be done with it. Next topic, you know, how did it go down? It, you know, it's not a matter of how, it's why. I've told you why. Speaking of why, see, the state of Colorado announced that some 42, 43 priests are now being indicted on sexually assaulting Roman Catholic boys, 163 Roman Catholic boys, I think that's the number. 166 children were abused by 43 Roman Catholic priests in the state of Colorado. I want to say emphatically, the single most disgusting institution in world history, and there have been some bad ones, man, is the Roman Catholic Church. It just don't get worse than they are. And what they're doing now, where, you know, here's another, just in one state, over a very short period of time, another 43 priests, obviously they're abusing four children apiece, 166 children. That is actually mild, as bad as pedophilia is, compared to the way this church has acted over most of its existence. We're in a chapter that we're going over God's promises to Dode, which he basically says that if all these things that I have promised Dode aren't true of Dode, then you need to call me a liar. And yet they all were passed on, taken from Dode and given to the Christian Jesus Christ. And trying to figure out how that happened, you know, God's upset about it. So, you know, for those of you that want to cling to your precious Jesus Christ, I'm here to tell you, God is really mad at all the things that he promised Dode being taken away from Dode and given to this misnomer, Jesus Christ. And it, I don't think it'd be a difference if they got his name right. So it's not about the name. And so I wanted to figure out how this happened, and it caused me to have to do an enormous amount of research to understand the creation of the books of the Christian New Testament, particularly what I have referred to as Matanyan. I will try never to use that as a name anymore. I was going to call it what it is, the Gospel of Matthew. And we're going to go into it because it's I was wrong, man. I absolutely going to hear it. Admit it, I was wrong on the Gospel of Matthew. And then we're going to go into what Paul said to accomplish this, to transfer all the promises God made to Dode to his Jesus Christ, such that when we say, wait a minute, Dode was the Messiah. David's the Messiah. People don't even know his name, so when I call him Dode, I'm sure people say, who the hell are you talking about? But Dode's the Messiah. He's the Son of God. He's the not only the King of Israel, he's the King of Kings. The second coming is with Dode. And so I had to figure out in Paul's writings, where did he say that? And I found out both places where he made that claim, one in a speech and one in written form. And we're going to go through that before this chapter is done as well. And I hope that everyone who hears this, who reads this, is as disgusted as I am. And the way that Paul misrepresented and misconstrues and misquotes what Yahweh said in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms to try to justify a point that is wholly irrational from the beginning. And how now you read Christian homilies, Christian sermons, Christian writings, Christian analysis, saying, oh yeah, Paul spoke the truth. He enlightened us. Just, you know, you can't be better than David and Abraham and Moses, and he refers to all of them and explains how none of them were justified by the Torah, but instead by faith. And so it's a brilliant analysis that's part of the Pauline doctrine, and it's all rubbish. I mean, it's just all so sick how he takes these things out of context and misquotes them and twists them and perverts them. And you wonder, how is it that in all these years, rather than apologizing for them, these idiot Christian pastors can't take 15 minutes to do what I did. Actually compare Paul's quote to what's actually written. And then when they're the opposite, say, wait a minute, somebody's a liar here. I know, Kirk, you've made it through the Romans, not the Romans, because it's not completed yet, but you made it through Acts 13.
I've had 91 pages so far, so
I don't know what you've been up to lately.
But.
Yeah, well into the chapter. So, but that's way before page 91, where this is what Paul's claiming God said, and this is what he actually said. And in most cases, they're the opposite. And it's so aggravating. And then you look at the cast of characters that promoted that lie, and they're repulsive. I mean, it makes I almost cringe to say it. Oh, well, I'm going to say it. No, I'm not going to say it. It's too disgusting. I mean, I wanted to say it's, you know, like pedophilia is child's play compared to what these buffoons did. What their hatred of Jews is literally satanic.
Yeah.
And that's the entire basis of the religion. Is that okay? We got all this stuff in this Torah and prophets and Psalms. We're going to call that the Old Testament. It was all about Jews. So we have to have God rather than going to honor his promises for them. We have to have God renege on every promise he made to every one of them and apply it to us. And the justification of that is that the Jews killed Jesus. It just goes down right to that. The Jews killed Jesus, so God's upset with the Jews because the Jews killed him, and therefore all the promises made to the Jews are now going to the Gentiles because the Jews killed Jesus. It really isn't any more complicated than that, except for one problem. Well, two problems.
Yeah, that's right.
No man can kill
the Jews
God.
Didn't kill Yosha. Yeah, the Jews didn't kill Jesus. The Romans did. And it's the Romans that became the Roman Catholic Church. And that point is irrefutable. Imperial Rome became the Roman Catholic Church. Imperial Rome killed him. And guess what? Even if you were to spend an eternity proving otherwise, which you can't do, it doesn't matter. Other than to refute this stupid Christian justification of everything was transferred to them because God pissed the Jews for killing him. What did he come to do? What was Yosha's purpose?
To die.
The Passover
lamb.
Just
make the sacrifice of the Passover lamb. Can the Passover lamb make the sacrifice without the body of the Passover lamb dying?
No.
So if the Jews actually did, as the Roman Catholics protest, and killed Jesus, then they ought to be thanking them. Because without that, his whole life
would be... reconciliation. Right.
Yeah.
So if you extrapolate out there, you got the same thing.
If they did what Torah required, where they presented the Passover lamb, you ought to be thanking them. And by the way, if they actually killed God, you ought to be worshiping them.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done anything that was as gut-wrenching as what we're going to deal with. I want to step back in one passage so we just pick it up in context. This was the last passage we covered. A week ago, it is Mizmor 89:14. Mizmor 89 is as powerful a message as God has ever conveyed to us. It says, being correct, tzedak. Tzedak is as important a Hebrew word as you could have. If you were to define tzedak by one word, it actually wouldn't be being correct. It would be being right.
Being right.
I mean, it's not much of a difference between correct and right, but just right, having the right answer.
Yeah.
Being correct, being honest, being right, being fair, being accurate, proper, just. I mean,
I like that. That's what I strive to be all the time. I hate being wrong.
Yeah.
That's why if I'm wrong, well, I want someone to point it out to me and show me and prove to me I'm wrong, because I hate being wrong.
You know how hard it was for me to write this chapter when the crux of the chapter, I have to admit that I was wrong?
Yeah.
And it's not that it's humbling. That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with, oh my goodness, I've made all of these claims and I was wrong. And you just go, why couldn't I have figured it out sooner than that? And what I was wrong on is when I refer to Matanyah and speak of him being an eyewitness account. There is an element of truth to it. I was right, but I was also really, really, really wrong. And since we've brought this up, and it'll be a month or so before we actually get to this part, what I have learned, and it's unequivocal, presented in this chapter, I've spent a very long amount of time sitting in this chair, 15 to 18 hours in a day after day, digging this up. But I was right that that the Sermon on the Mount, as it's presented in Matanyah, was originally written in Hebrew. Was not written by a disciple named Matanyah. Now, I'm going to try to be correct here with Tzedak. It was not written by a disciple named Matanyah. I don't think there was a disciple named Matanyah. The disciple's name was Loewi. It only appears as Matanyah in the book now called the Gospel of Matanyah, the Gospel of Matthew. It is both in Luke and in Mark. It is Loewi is the name of the tax collector. And while I really wouldn't care what's in Luke, because Luke is absolutely, by Paul's own admission, his co-worker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perhaps his frustrated exorcist, and maybe even one of his lovers. But Luke is as bad gets. But the actual name of the disciple's name is Loewi. You'll see that there's both Mark, and Mark is the basis of the Gospel of Matthew. I know that we don't like it when scholars say something and we don't think they're justified. Well, put this in your pipe and smoke it. There are 661 lines in the Gospel of Mark. 661 lines. Kirk, you read it. Do you know how many of those 661 lines in the Gospel of Mark are in the Gospel of Matthew?
I think it's 660.
That would be only left one out. No, it's 600. It's 600 to 661. In other words, 90% of Mark is in Matthew, and the only thing he leaves out are things where he has whoever wrote the Gospel of Matthew wants to blame Jews for God turning on them. They're presented. In fact, these sections are worse than the protocols of the elders of Zion. So what I have learned for absolute certain, is that there was a book written in Hebrew by Yosha's disciple, likely the tax collector, and therefore Loewi was his name, and that book was treasured, and in particular treasured by a group of people called Iboni. Now, Iboni is a name, my guess is that no one's ever, unless you are really deep into this, you've never heard of Iboni. I had never heard of Iboni. You know, we have this propensity to say that the first followers of Yosha were called the followers of the way.
Yeah.
No, they were called Iboni. When they were slurred, as they were by every early church father, every one of them, without question, denounced these people. They were called Ebonites. but they were called Ebony. Ebony is the term when Yosha is giving the Sermon on the Mount, and he says, "Blessed are thee," and it's always just translated simply as poor. It doesn't mean poor.
Poor, yeah.
What Ebony means are blessed are those who are oppressed and who are in need and want help. The Ebony are those who understand that they're being oppressed because their position is the correct one, and the world endorses an incorrect one.
Yeah, they're surrounded.
Yeah, so to be an Ebony, you have to be someone who is like us, who is opposed to the popular schemes of religion and politics and conspiracy, and embracing the very unpopular testimony of Yahweh. To be singing Dode's praises rather than Jesus Christ's praises is to be an Ebony. Well, the Ebony, as it turns out, had a Hebrew text of Yosha saying, and they combined that with the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and that was it. They observed the Mikra. They observed the Shabbat. They talked about their participation in the covenant, and they talked about how Yosha's statements were a direct reflection of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms as if he walked out of the pages of them. And on top of that, they thought that Paul was a false prophet and apostate.
Like them already.
My kind of people.
Yeah. My kind of people. And so every early church father writes about them, every single one of them. I mean, it's Tertullian, Origen, Eusebius. It's just Justin Martyr. Goes down the list, all of them. And, of course, they all despise them because they recognize Paul's a complete fraud, and they're only in the Hebrew text. So it is absolutely certain that they wrote it. And every one of them quotes something. Even Jerome, the guy that wrote the Vulgate, even he quotes from them, from this Hebrew text. So clearly there was a Hebrew text. But for those that, and I get so many emails saying, are you aware that there's an English translation now of the Gospel of Matthew in Hebrew? Oh,
no,
good grief. Folks, no. Nobody has a copy of the Hebrew text. It was destroyed deliberately.
An English translation of an Ethiopian translation that supposedly, according to legend, came from the Hebrew.
Yeah, the Coptic, whatever. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm here to tell you that that they are so radically, other than the Sermon on the Mount, that what they read has almost nothing in common with what is in the Gospel of Matthew. For example, the genealogies was not in the Hebrew account. The Hebrew account didn't begin there. Didn't even have it. It did begin with the Sermon on the Mount. And the most interesting thing is where it ends. You know, Yosha said, I came for the lost sheep of Yisrael. So of the disciples, who do you think, according to the lone Hebrew account that was written by Loewe, the disciple, the tax collector turned disciple, who do you think that according to the eyewitness was the first person that Yosha appeared to post Bakuta?
Jacob?
Yeah, you win. Jacob. That is correct. Came to his
That's
brother.
Very
Jacob.
Telling.
Yes. Oh, it's really telling.
I mean, why? How you deal with that? Why would he go to the Yisrael? Duh.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah. Came to his brother, Jacob. So it exists, but the problem from that point on is that 220 statements that are in the Gospel of Matthew came from Luke, and which is 24% of the total. 600 of the 661 in Mark were incorporated. That is 56% of the total. It leaves only 20% of the book that is not in Mark or Luke. And of that, about half of that is the Sermon on the Mount. And all the rest of it is just a repulsive blend of anti-Semitism. Likely written sometime between 80 and 90 CE.
You know, another reason wasting time on the Greek text is just wasting time. Unless you're using it to prove Christianity wrong by using their own text, you're not going to learn anything from it.
Nope. And it turns out that, the omissions that were added, that we have absolutely no evidence whatsoever, not a single textual statement prior to the, in fact, all the way through the 8th century, you've got nothing on. I'm going to tell you some things we have nothing on. It's just amazing. That whole I'm going to put in air quotes here, trial, because there was no trial. But that what's called the trial, the episode before Pilate was probably the proper pronunciation. It doesn't appear in any manuscript except Vaticanus and Sinaiticus, which are the joke of jokes, prior to the end of the 8th century. And you know that the statement that the Roman Catholic Church calls it as the basis of the Roman Catholic Church, upon this rock I will build my church?
No. Yes. Uh-huh.
That's the 6th chapter. Guess what? 16th chapter.
Doesn't exist.
Not a word. There isn't a single fragment of anything in that chapter all the way through the 8th century. Think of that. Made up.
800 years.
Yeah. Made up. So,
but it doesn't matter. You can show them all this evidence, and they're still not going to change.
Oh, I want them to consider it. I want them to consider it. You know, you have another 166 children abused in the state of California by 43 Roman Catholic priests, and they don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
No, they'll be there next Sunday.
Yeah, they'll be there next Sunday. I don't care. Being correct is important while executing good judgment. And by the way, Dode wasn't right on everything. He made mistakes. You know, I feel bad that I made a mistake on calling it, you know, Matanyah eyewitness account, all that sort of thing. Yeah, there's a little bit of that there. Sermon on the Mount is, but after that, it isn't. And it's really an attitude of striving to be correct. Being correct on the big picture thing and striving to be correct on the details. Like JB, you said you hate being wrong. Well, the moment you correct what was wrong, you're no longer wrong.
That's what I love.
Then you're right. Being correct while executing good judgment and justly resolving disputes. Wa-mitzvah. So Sadak, Wa-mitzvah. Be right, being right about the means, you know, of executing good judgment and justly resolving disputes. Serve as the foundation of your throne. This is being said about Dode. The very foundation of his seat of honor, his position of authority, his throne, is being right while executing good judgment and justly resolving disputes, or you could render it being correct about the means to justly execute, resolve disputes, serve as the foundation of your place of authority. Dode was in this position with Yahweh because on the big issues of who he is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return, Dode was right. Then it says, a loving relationship and genuine mercy, along with a steadfast commitment to the truth, encounter those who enter your presence. Specific to Dode, and then goes to generally to Yahweh. Now, there is, I think, still a frustration with some people that do not want to see Dode tower above Yosha. And yet that's what he does. And the way to resolve that conflict, if you're able to let go of, because we were all raised in this Christian society where the single most important person who ever lived in a Christian society is Jesus Christ. So how do you, I mean, he's the Messiah. He's the King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. He's the Savior of the world. He is God's son. When in fact, all those things apply to Dode, and very few of them apply to Yosha. Yosha never said, I'm the son of God. Yosha never said, I'm the Messiah. Yosha never said, I'm the Savior.
Said he was son of man.
Yeah, never even said he was God.
That's right.
Yeah, son of God, son of man. So the way to appreciate this is that Yosha doesn't add one iota to God. In fact, while Yosha exists, it subtracts from God.
Yeah,
Yosha is a subtraction from God. He's part of God, set apart from him. Diminished manifestation. So Yosha is a subtraction from God. He adds nothing to him. Yosha, Yahweh is no greater with Yosha. Yahweh is Yahweh. When Yosha is set apart, he's actually diminished by him. The entire purpose of creating the universe wasn't for Yahweh to set part of himself apart and be diminished by that, or to have part of himself be tortured. The purpose of the universe was to enjoy a family and to spend time with children and to have the joy of giving to and lifting up and exploring with and teaching, loving children.
Yeah.
Dode is God's son. Dode embodies the reason the universe exists. Dode increases God. While Yosha subtracts from him, Dode increases him. Dode is everything God wanted when he created the universe. He wanted somebody who had their own free will as a wholly independent person could choose to learn about him, could choose to share others with others about him, who could choose to form a father-son relationship with him, who could be a man's man with God. Real, brilliant, correct, judgmental, passionate, loving, willing to fight for the things worth fighting for. Dode wasn't perfect, but God, if God wanted perfect, he'd go out and play with himself.
Yeah. To create a family, it requires souls that are not his. Yosha's soul was his.
Correct.
It can't be any other way. It has to be
correct.
Other souls.
And so once you understand that the covenant is everything, that everything exists for the covenant, and that Dode is the living embodiment of the covenant, then you understand why God is returning with Dode. Why God said, I chose him. He's my chosen one. He's the one I anointed. He's the Messiah. He is my king. He's the King of Kings. And what God says of Dode, before me, not beside me, not behind me, not after me, not as an afterthought, before me, he's going to be like the sun. Not the S-U-N, although he calls him, you know, his son, S-O-N, I'm sorry, but like the S-U-N. He says he's going to be as brilliant before my presence as the sun. The Shemach in Hebrew. Dode's not coming back with the flaming red hair, and I don't think it's flaming red, it's probably auburn red. But with the ruddy red hair and handsome good looks of that was able to be such a dashing figure. But he's coming back. He's, you know what, brilliant as light. So anyway, that's Yahweh's idea of a loving relationship and genuine mercy and a steadfast commitment with the dove. All right, so this is now new material. It says, and fellas, I don't know what your reaction is when you read this, but for me, it is one of the maybe the top 20 or 30 experiences in the last 18 years when I read this. We know that Yahweh has fulfilled the first four mikrais, Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuot. He did so all in order. He did so all in year 4000 Yah. And he, by doing so, he facilitated every one of the benefits of the covenant to make his sons and daughters immortal, to make them perfect, he such that he could adopt us into his family. Yahweh has done these all of these things, enriching and empowering us based on those fulfilling the first four mikrais, Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuot. That leaves three Moed Mekre yet to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It is obvious that Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, is going to be his return. And it's going to be year 6000 Yah, and that'll be followed by transforming the earth into the conditions found in the Garden of Eden, where Dod is the King of Kings running through the thousand-year millennia, beginning 5 days later with Sukkah. But you still have a teruah in there. And we've really, I know I have struggled a bit trying to date teruah. And also just to emphasize the importance of teruah, because it was my contention, I've said this a lot, that I see what we do as a continuous fulfillment of teruah. Teruah is to tell people, warn people that the popular path, the religious path, the political path, the conspiratorial path, the path of the patriot, the path of those who are pro-military, leads away from God. And that there is a path that leads to him, but it goes through the Moed Mikre, and that it is intertwined with the terms and conditions of the covenant. That is what we do most every day. Mm-hmm. So we do in these shows, so we do in these books, so we do when we're
home study,
engaging in conversation, online. It's what we do. I think our whole mission is a living embodiment of teruah. You know, Dod is the living embodiment of the covenant. We get to play. We get to participate. I think we aren't the totality of it, but we are, to a large extent, the living embodiment of teruah. That is our calling. That is our mission. It's for darn sure it isn't Kippurim, because Kippurim is the reconciliation of Yisrael and Yehudah. But if we do our job really well at teruah, that's going to happen, and it's going to happen. Well, it's going to happen anyway. It's just going to happen more wonderfully than if we don't do this teruah job. So with that in mind, I want to read the Mizmor 89:15. Delighted to show the way and blessed. Ashri, happy to reveal the proper path to the relationship, and fortunate, treated favorably. From Asher, enjoying the benefits of the relationship by having been shown the steps to walk to get the most out of life. Are the people who are aware of and who acknowledge Yada, who are familiar with, acquainted with, learn about, make known, who comprehend and understand teruah. The fifth of the seven mikrei. It's the time to expose corruptions while sharing the truth, crying out an alarm while shouting for joy, blowing the shofar to announce the harvest of covenant souls. who walk halak with the light into the presence of Yahweh, ma'or pane ata, along with, within, and into the shining brilliance of your appearance and face, Yahweh. Delighted to show the way and blessed, happy to reveal the proper path to the relationship, are the people who are aware of and acknowledge Teruah, who walk in your light into the presence of Yahweh.
Wow.
Now, there is a way to translate this, as I did it at the end, where the, because there is a your in that last statement, where the your is with your light, meaning Doe's light. Because you can't make it a capital your light into the presence of Yahweh, but you can certainly, since your is there, Atta, it can be your light, Doe's, because this whole mizmor is about Doe. From beginning to end, it's the celebration of Doe's light. With the light that Dode has provided, enlightening us. And it's just, remember the last statement said, Dode's right.
Yep.
So to understand Teruah and the light that Dode has provided. Man, when I translated this, my first thought was, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is what we know. This is what we're experiencing.
And you're going to love the King James. Blessed are the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord.
Hey, JB's thinking of the King James and the joyful sound and all of that. Would you like to tell me how many Moed Mikre there are?
Seven
of them. Okay. And would you agree that the first four of them are Pesach, Matzah, Bukkotim, and Shavuot?
Yes.
I have that correct?
Yeah.
What does God call the fifth of the Mikra? What's the next one? What does he call it?
Teruah.
What's the word here?
Teruah.
Do you think that God, do you think that between the time that Yahweh said that the fifth of the sixth Mikras, the one before reconciliation, the thing that's got to happen before reconciliation is those people that I have made immortal, that I have perfected, that I have adopted into my family, who I've enriched, who I've enlightened, and who I've empowered, need to share what's wrong with humanity, and it's really wrong, with what's right about what I say, such that there could be a Yom Kippurah.
Yeah.
It's got to be us, or people like us.
Yahweh used it in talking with Moshe and say, this is the fifth one. Do you think he had a senior moment and forgot, oh, gosh, you know, shouldn't use that term. I should use one of the, 18 Hebrew words for joy, and use one of the five Hebrew words for sound, and let me just make it a joyful song, a joyful sound, a happy note. I don't want to confuse people by using the word, the title that I picked for my fifth of 7 days to be called out of the world in me.
Dode was a much better wordsmith than me and a great poet. I'm pretty sure if he picked this word, he picked it for a reason.
Yep. Now, what's interesting here is that Doe didn't write this song. This is written of him, but he didn't write it. This is Yahweh's tribute. This is actually Yahweh's tribute to Doe. So the wordsmith here happens to be our favorite wordsmith. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. The only one probably better than Doe.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I would say that that's absolutely true. Although, if you ask God whose songs he most likes to hear, he says Doe's, not his own.
Oh, yeah.
So, delighted to show the way and blessed are the people who are aware of and acknowledge Teruah, who walk with your light into the presence of Yahweh. Holy mackerel, that's us. Over the course of the last 18 years, there have been a lot of goosebump moments and a lot of times where we found ourselves excited about reveling in what we learned. This is one of them. It affirms that we are delighted to reveal the proper path which leads to the covenant and reconciliation through Teruah. We understand the value of knowing, yada, what it's like to halak, walk, ba'or, ata, with your light into the presence of Yahweh. Now, everything that we have written and spoken these past 18 years is an expression of Teruah, celebrating its purpose. We have sought to shout out a warning boldly, bluntly, clearly, loudly, telling the world they need to listen. Their religious and political affiliations are putting them at odds with God, upsetting God. And at the same time, we have accurately, as completely as we're capable, collectively shared what Yahweh had to say about himself, explaining what he's offering and what he's expecting in return. And, you know, and I don't really know, you know, if you were to put all these things together, which one's the most important? Is the most important letting people know how hideous human institutions are and why they shouldn't be trusted? Is the most important thing explaining why God is so disgusted by every religion and political scheme and militaristic scheme? Is the most so that people at least know that those paths lead in the wrong direction? Or is the most important thing for us to explain who Yahweh really is, and that he is not a God who wants to be worshipped? He's not a God that's asking us to pray to him. He's not omnipresent. He's not omniscient. But he is one, fun, cool, bright, happy, uplifting Father.
I would say not one of the three is more important than the other, because any of the three without the other two is just useless.
And we give you two
so
more.
So you expose the corruptions, and people recognize it's corrupt, but they don't come to know Yahweh. It's no good. Yeah, without all three, it's kind of like Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. Without all three of them, each one in and of itself is useless.
And
correct.
You need to know there's another path.
Yeah, and then I think it's important for us, after we've done that, to say, this is what God is offering. You know, it's he's not offering a religious heaven. This is what he's actually offering. It's a covenant family. Take it or leave it.
If you don't like you're free to ignore it.
Yeah, if you don't like who Yahweh is, go away. If you don't like what he's offering, leave it.
Don't take it.
And this is what he expects in return. If you're going to be part of it, this ain't free love, baby. There's some things that are expected of you. And if you're not willing to act upon them, engage in them, trust them, accept them, you aren't welcome. I think you have to do all of them.
Yeah.
So this is Teruah, the very reason we are asked to celebrate it on the first day of the seventh month every year. And we should never, ever diminish the importance of Asher. It was because of Asher and 2 Solomon 7 that we came to Yada No. Without Asher, we don't yada know any of this. This is the halak path we have walked with the or light we have been given into the very presence of Yahweh our God. Mizmor Psalm 89:15 has transitioned from comparing Yahweh to Dode to celebrating our calling and purpose. One thing has led to another. I want to be very clear about this. When I personalize something, it says this is a celebration of our calling and purpose. Not an exclusive club. Anybody else that wants to do the same thing, expose and condemn religion and politics, that wants to explain why God hates these things, who wants to explain who Yahweh really is, who wants to share what God is offering, and who wants to explain what he expects in return, is now a celebration of the purpose of Teruah. So we're not precluding others from saying, this speaks about us. By all means, do these same five things.
We encourage you to, please.
Yeah. We're not saying it of ourselves that, oh boy, this is us and not you.
Exclusively.
No, we're saying this. We should all be saying this, and we can absolutely say this about what we're doing and where we fit into all of this. And we would love it if there were hundreds and thousands, millions, which we could include in that week. Doesn't dilute who we are and what we're doing one iota. But the fact is, this is a celebration of our calling and purpose. I just wish it was the celebration of a calling and purpose of a lot more people. Although, listen, Yahweh was clearly comfortable just having a relationship with Adam. And he was clearly happy having a relationship with the Dode. God does not need a huge family to enjoy forever.
He's a quality over quantity kind of person.
Yes. Now, since Yahweh has heightened our awareness of Teruah, and since we've come to appreciate what it represents and our role in it, just for fun, let's see if we can come a little closer to ascertaining its timing. That was a long time ago, but in the second to last chapter of volume 2 of Observations for Our Time, which was entitled Beginning of the End. JB, you've got it posted on your BerethYahweh.com site. We came to the realization that Teruah would be fulfilled after Israel is thinned at the waist and an ill attempt trade. This trade for land for peace. It's going to be as dumb as Neville Chamberlain's peace in our time. But that's going to happen. God's made it really clear Israel's going to be thinned at the waist and become indefensible. So we know, based upon what we read in Yeshaya 17 and 18, that this Teruah harvest is going to occur after Israel is thinned at the waist, and yet before the worst time of Jacob's troubles. Jacob's troubles and that Tsar, the word for troubles, and Jacob represents, of course, Yisrael. And troubles is shar. And that word has two connotations. One is aggravation and despair and agony and, you know, all the troubling kinds of things that you would think about in, like, the Christian tribulation. But it's equal parts correct to translate it thinning, reducing. So when it corresponds to the time that Israel is reduced, but what you find is that it progresses in terms of the aggravation and the thinning, and such that the worst part of the time of Jacob's troubles is really the last 3 years, maybe 3.5 years. I think Yahweh has to get his covenant family out after Israel is thinned at the waist, but before the asteroid Apophis hit, and we have the arrival of the Torahless one. Because there is a period where there are no witnesses, and then the two witnesses are sent in to torch the people's myths. So we have a period.
I think about it like this. You have so much Christian religion and theology focused around this, you know, tribulation and, you know, before the final 7 years. If it were to happen at the midpoint, and if people even interpreted it that way, which, yeah, I'm kind of with you in that, you know, I think most people are going to ignore it, but then even still, you're going to have people thinking, oh, well, this is the beginning of the final 7 years, so we've got all this, and they're going to miss a lot of stuff because they've been so misinformed. And that would lead to allowing a lot of it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm fairly convinced now that this is not going to take place in 2026. And I want to tell you what I think the math is. Because I'm helped in a lot of ways now by someone that is constantly sending me and appealing with all sorts of related texts, and the person has asked me to translate Mizmor 89 now for months, and you know I finally did it. I said, oh my goodness, thank goodness I didn't translate this thing earlier. I wasn't in a position even to fully appreciate it. And then they said, you know, I think there may be an answer when you get to Teruah and Mizmor 90. And this is what I read in Mizmor 90. And I want you guys to, you know, if you think maybe I'm out on a limb here, I think this I think these things are related. So we're translating now Mizmor 89, and this is what's written in 90. It's a song was composed by Moshe now and speaks of Yahweh being the dwelling place. Yahweh is going to be the dwelling place, of course, during the celebration of Sukkah for his people, for all generations. And in it, he quotes Yahweh saying, return and come back, children of men. Yahweh is calling his children home and before and during this time of Jacob's trouble. This is followed by, indeed, our days have the appearance of your frustration. So he's talking about now this period of Jacob's troubles. We spend our time muttering. The days of our years are 70, and then by reason of strength become 80. For it is soon past, and we fly away. It is soon past, and then we fly away. Who knows the extent of your frustration and respect your passion? So teach us to number and weigh our days so that we may derive wisdom by executing good judgment. Return, Yahweh, and let us breathe in relief. Okay, so there's a couple of numbers in there, 70 and 80. And if it wasn't for the things that surround it, I wouldn't have made this connection. But let's look at the things that surround it. Yahweh being the dwelling place. Oh, and now we're talking about Yisrael,
mm-hmm.
right? Yahweh right. being the dwelling place
mm-hmm.
for his people for all generations. Now, so this is making Yisrael a dwelling place for all time, hadn't happened yet, still future. Return and come back, children of men. Yahweh calling that his children come out of her, my people, of Babylon, come out of Babylon, my people, as it's in Yirmiyah. He's calling his children home right now. Indeed, our days have the appearance of your frustration. Yeah. I don't think Yahweh was all that frustrated from the time of Malachi, 500 BCE, through, even past where we are right now. I think he just thought this in human way, humanity is such a bunch of blittering idiots. There's no one that has a clue. No one cares. No one's engaged. There's no one I can work with. I think God's frustration, God only gets frustrated when something is really close that he wants. Let me give you an example. We see God really frustrated when he's talking to Moshe. You know, when God, because Moshe is the only person on the planet that can do this job. God does not work alone, and there's only one person on the planet that he can work through to liberate his people from Mitzrayim. There's only one person on the planet that understood the mindset, the religion, the politics, the military, and the economics of Egypt and why they were so disgusting. There's only one person that God could go into Egypt with that he didn't have to spend all of this time wallowing in, teaching him why he hated Mitzrayim, Egypt, why he hated their politics, why he hated their religion, why he hated their government and their economics and all that sort of thing. It was only Moshe.
Yep. And who had access.
Yeah.
You know, no one else had that kind of access.
That's right.
Who could go stand right up to the Pharaoh and speak to him.
Yeah, that's right. It was the only person. So God appears to him as the fire on the top of this mountain. And it's in a booming voice. And Moshe, you know, I want you to do this with me. He says, no, I don't want to do it. I really want you to do this with me. No, I'm not your guy. You can't speak through me. My diction's worse than that Yada guy. No, forget it. And God really got frustrated because there wasn't any more time to dilly-dally. It was the time to get this done, and Moshe was the guy he wanted to work with. And so God got frustrated. And he just said, you know, hey, idiot, who created your mouth? Who made that tongue? Don't you think I can do this? And he still said no. He said, your brother's a blabbermouth. He's coming around the corner right now. I'll have him join us.
That's funny.
But God's frustrated. So for God to be frustrated, I know we're talking about a time where he's actually engaged. Because for most of the last 2,000 years, God hasn't been engaged. He couldn't be because of the way humanity was so revolting, particularly those who are claiming to do his work. So he was disengaged. God's engaged. Indeed, the days have the appearance of your frustration. We spend our time muttering. The days of our years are 70. Our years, talking about Yisrael, are 70, and then by reason of strength become 80, where it is soon past and we fly away. Well, and it's we fly away. When is Yisrael going to fly?
You know.
Yeah, when he returns.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
When he returns.
So, who knows the extent of your frustration and respect your passion? So teach us to number and weigh our days so that we may derive wisdom by executing good judgment. When you read that kind of thing, it says, okay, I gave you brains. I think you're capable of figuring this out. Apply yourself. Try to figure it out. Think about it. So teach us to number and weigh our days so we may derive wisdom by executing good judgment. Return, Yahweh, and let us breathe in relief. So this is speaking of the time Yahweh is going to return. All right. This book, Coming Home in Our Time, which seeks to call Yisrael and Yehudah out of Babylon and back to Yahweh and Yisrael, began by pronouncing the second coming of Dod exactly 70 years after the nation of Israel was restored, making it possible. Exactly 70 years. This was followed by, how will you respond, being right to Dod or not to Dod? And the next chapter is called Restoring My People. Whether or not, you know, I am that choder, that insignificant twig, or the Nakri, an observant foreigner, and whether these words comprise the neck, the banner that Yahweh has promised to raise for his people or not. Or if I'm just an irrelevant means to awaken someone else such that the neck will be written. We're going to continue for another 10 years until 2028, 80 years after Israel's birth. rebirth. And just prior to the commencements of the worst time of Jacob's trouble. And then we're going to fly away. We know these things because we were told as much as in Mizmor 90. Now, for those who may be interested, in 2027, the new year begins on Tuesday, March 9th at sunset, such that Teruah begins at sundown on Wednesday, September 1st, and concludes prior to sunset on Thursday, September 2nd. The following year, in 2028, Teruah will be celebrated beginning on Tuesday, September 9th, and it will conclude the following afternoon. If it were not for the fact that we will be given everything we need and want, I'd encourage covenant members to pack their bags for Tuesday, September 19th in 2028.
Ain't much here I want to bring with me.
I don't think you're going to take anything with you but your soul.
My family,
nope.
That's about it.
Yeah. Yep.
All is important.
Yes. So I think that's what he's telling us. I think it's 2028, September 2nd.
Well, that did ring true.
September 19th.
I've been thinking that time period for a while now for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
Just a lot of things seem to add up into that. So
yeah.
That's kind of the drawing point. That's where Yahweh draws the line in the sand and says, you're with me or you're against me. That's where the third option gets removed. And we'll be left here until that point to continue to provide witness. And after that point, what we leave behind will be all that is left, but we will be kept out of that.
Well, there will be shortly thereafter, if it is September 19th of 2028, it won't be long after that before the two witnesses show up.
Yeah.
With Elia being one of the two. And it is going to be fun to listen to him and watch him roast some rabbis. Now, that's a funny man.
I've only done a handful of stuff of his, but oh my God, the stuff I did, I fell in love with his style.
Oh, I love his style. That he is sarcastic. He is funny.
Witty.
He's witty.
He's got my kind of humor.
Got all the time in the world. I understand your God's going to the bathroom. Let him finish. He may be constipated. Let's give him time. Don't want to rush him.
That was probably the most I've ever laughed while translating was when I was going through his stuff.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow.
What? All right, so we rejoice because there is vindication in getting Yahweh's name right. This is returning now to Mizmor 89:16. In your name, it says, in your name they rejoice. This is speaking of the people now, specifically, who are embracing Teruah, who understand what Teruah represents, who are engaged in Teruah. He says, in your name, they rejoice every day. And in your justice and vindication, by being right, they are lifted on high. They rise, going to a higher elevation. We are going to benefit from Teruah and be lifted up because in Yahweh's name, we rejoice every day. And in his justice, his vindication, by being right, we're going to be lifted up.
What a great line.
Join us. Plenty of room. The first step we take to knowing Yahweh, to being right regarding who he is, what he's offering, and how we should engage with him, how we avail ourselves of his blessing, is to acknowledge and proclaim his name. We do so without hesitation or equivocation every day. If there was one thing you would say about us, that would be it. It's Yahweh, 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 and no one else but Yahweh. And we only speak of folks like Dode because Yahweh speaks of folks like Dode. And if Dode is important to Yahweh, he's important to us.
Important to us, yeah.
Just that simple. We've done everything we can to align our perspective with Yahweh. We never say God's on our side. We're on his.
Correct.
We have come to appreciate the many ways he is you, such that you becomes our. This is a, you know, we go back to that so many times where Yahweh is speaking to us, where the pronouns he and you and your and our are interchanged. And this psalmist can't resist from including himself among those who are enveloped and adorned in Yahweh's radiant power. So he's talking about all these people are going to that identify with Teruah and understand its purpose and who know Yahweh's name. He now counts himself among them. Indeed, your power is their adornment and our status and radiance. So he started off with their, so we're going to be adorned in Yahweh's power. That's the whole purpose of Teruah. That's what he's saying. But then he brings himself right back into it. It's our status and radiance. It's raised by your desire to be accepting. For our deliverance and protection are from Yahweh. We're going to be delivered from this world by Yahweh. Because Yahweh wants to accept us. It's his pleasure to do so. And we're going to be able to enjoy this Teruah harvest because Yahweh's power, his fortification, his strength, is going to be our apparel, our ornamentation, it's how we're going to appear. According to the set apart one of Yisrael, and accordingly, I should say, the set apart one of Yisrael is our king. You know, there's a, in English, this would be, if you look at an English Bible, this is going to read the Holy One. But it's not holy, it's set apart. So if you were to look in the long history of Yisrael, who is the one who is different from all the others?
Who is
the one that is set apart? Dode.
Mm-hmm.
Dode is the one who is the Messiah. He's the one that God chose. He is the king. He is the King of Kings. He's the one that's part of the second coming. He's the one that God said, he is my son. He's the one that God said, he is right. He's the branch. So who's the most unique? Who's the only, with only two people who engaged as a shepherd king over, the only one shepherd king, actually, but only two kings over United Israel.
Yeah. Moshe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes, Dode. Definitely Dode.
Yeah. So who's the set apart one of Yisrael?
Dode.
Well, yeah, you also, by the way, you have to be a king.
Yeah.
So can't be Moshe. Can't be Abraham. So accordingly, the set apart one of Yisrael is our king. So, you know, there's only one. There's only one that was the king of Yisrael. So he's the set apart one of a united Yisrael. Dode. Yahweh is adjoining his children with a garment of light, an enlightening, perfecting, and immortalizing empowerment adornment provided by the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit. This is how the imperfect appear perfect before Yah. It's what makes us acceptable. This garment of light not only delivers us into Yahweh's presence, it protects us when we're there. And throughout all time, you know, we are not collectively going to go and visit galaxies far away and planets and all sorts of explosive and extraordinary situations without a lot of protection. We're going to need this this garment of light in eternity. I was explaining to someone today and said, you know, with this in the whole concept of the Christian resurrection from the dead and bodily resurrection is just so unbelievably stupid because it accomplishes nothing. You cannot experience eternity in a physical body. Physical bodies not only decay, where there is matter, there cannot be an eternity of time. Time is not maneuverable where there is a physical body. So to be infinite in time, to be eternal, you have to be transformed from a physical body to energy-based and light. And so it is the means that we have to be transformed in this way. And so a physical body resurrected Jesus is counterproductive. He can't be immortal. Can't be perfect. We have to be transformed from matter to energy, where then, like light, time, fullness of time exists. And so it's the set-apart spirit adorning us in this garment of light that makes us acceptable and makes us eternal and perfects us, does all these marvelous things. Now, since Kodesh is universally corrupted to holy in English Bibles, the set-apart one of Yisrael, our king, is rendered the holy one of Israel, our king. This is then taken out of context to infer that our king is Jesus, because religions have made him holy. And thus this psalm, which has been devoted to declaring that Dod was one with God and selected and distinguished by God, setting him apart from all others, needs to be wholly ignored. Dod's name is ascribed to this prophecy, and Jesus is not, but that doesn't stop Christians. They don't care. Dod was the king of a unified Israel, and Jesus had no kingdom to call his own. And in fact, when he was even, you know, if you want to believe any of these New Testament prophecies, when he was questioned, he said, you know, so you're calling yourself a king then? And this is the one that's in John, actually, Yahuchanan. He said, no, I'm not the kingdom of this world. I don't have one in this world. Dod did. Dod was set apart from Israel, consistent with the text, while Yosheth was set apart from Yahweh. Dod was set apart, the most unique of all Israel, which is what this says, the set apart one of Israel. Yosheth wasn't set apart from Israel. He was set apart from Yahweh.
Good point.
Yeah. Yahweh is telling us a wonderful story. It's a love story. It reads, at the time you spoke in a revelation to your dedicated and faithful one, I proclaimed assistance, supplying what is needed on behalf of the one with the strength to prevail. I have raised up and exalted the chosen one from the people. I discovered and then made Dod, my co-worker. Out of my oil, which sets apart, dedicating the recipient to service, I have anointed him, Meshach, such that to show the way to the relationship, my hand will be established and steadfast with you. In addition, my Zeruah, my protective shepherd, shall empower and embolden you, strengthening you. First of all, who is God talking about here? Is he talking about Jebus?
Nope.
No, you think God doesn't know the difference between the name Yahusha and Dod?
He doesn't have senior moments, as you say.
No. Yeah, I think if he wanted to say, this is about Yahusha, he would have said, I discovered and made known Yahusha. By the way, could Yahweh have discovered Yahusha?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. But he could have discovered Dode, couldn't he? God is taking credit for having discovered Dode. God is saying, listen, I scoured the earth. Well, I didn't have to scour the earth, but because he was only interested in working with Yisrael and Yehuda, particularly Yehuda. So, hey, all he had to scour is all
that
of them.
That narrows it down a little bit.
But God scoured all of them and said, I found him. Shamuel didn't find him. Shaul didn't find him. The people didn't find him. He was out there tending sheep in Bethlehem. I found him. I chose him from all the people. And it says, who is that? Oh. So, come on, Christians. Stop it with your Jesus. God chose him. Now, that's powerful in itself, because I know that we've talked about this before, and I've hinted all around it. I've said that it's something you really want to think about. But the more we are confronted with this, the more obvious it becomes that those who engage in a relationship with Yahweh and who become part of the covenant, who are really genuinely and passionately integrated into his family, God made first contact. God made first contact with Abraham. God speaking out to Noah. God went out and found Dode. God reached out to Moshe. God reached out to Yirmiyah and to Yeshayah. Identified both of them while they were still in the womb. God introduces himself. What we do from there is our choice, but every place we read, God reaches out. It's his universe. He conceived life. It is his home. It's his covenant family. You know, it's just like I've had lots of relationships in my life. I got to choose who I had a relationship with. Now, they could choose, hey, stupid, I don't want a relationship with you. Or they could choose, yeah, let's engage in a relationship. But I always had a choice. Why should we limit God and say God doesn't have a choice? He has to accept anybody who wants to be part of his family, and he has no choice. Well, that's pretty stupid, isn't it? So at this time, you spoke in a revelation to your dedicated and faithful ones, saying, I have provided assistance, supplying what is needed on behalf of the one with the strength to prevail. God gave what was sufficient for Dode to do the job he did, unifying Israel, establishing Jerusalem as the home base, understanding the importance of Zion, writing these psalms so that we might understand. Fighting for what was right. God gave him the power and the strength, the Gabor. Gabor is that word that told us that the Yeshayah 9 was not speaking of Yosha, but Dode. Dode's the Gabor, the fighter, the mightiest of men, strong, effective, valiant, a brave warrior, one who battles from Gabor to prevail. To be powerful, to be mighty, to be strong, to prove one's valor, and to be a champion of a virtuous cause. It tells you a lot about what God likes. God obviously likes the Gabor qualities, strength, might, effective, valiant, fighter, brave, courageous, a battler. Now, guys, I don't know if it happens to you. It sure as heck happens to me a lot. There's a lot of times where I've come up with a passage that, you know, I am never going to figure this out. This is not what I was expecting. I do not know what to do with this.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
Okay. Sure. And put your battle through it. I don't know how many times we've come across just so many disappointing situations. I had a friend that told me the other day, he said, you know, we've been through a lot with you. We've really been through a lot with you. I mean, you know, there was the realization that there was no renewed covenant. Wow. the realization that it wasn't Yahweh, but Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
The realization that there is no New Testament. The realization that Bible's a bogus term. The realization that Paul was a false prophet. The realization that he whose name shall not be mentioned that was so conspiratorial and cantankerous and abusive is somebody that we ought not have be part of our company, be around us. And all of that fight that was associated with that. And then we have Dode surpassing Yahusha. We've been through a lot together.
I guess.
But we battled through it. Some people fell off and some battled through it. You know, I when I sent off this chapter we're working on, because it gets really controversial at the end. More controversial, more explosive than anything we've done so far. And those who are committed to the family, going to battle through it. We're going to fight our way through it. It is work. It does take strength. It takes a commitment. It can't be wishy-washy. Are you going to go where the words lead, even if it's not popular, even if it's not where you thought we were going to go? He says, I have raised up and exalted the chosen one from the people. The chosen one. I mean, how does it get better than that, being God's chosen one?
Yeah.
But JB, Kirk, all of you who are listening, with Dode, we see what Yahweh sees in us. He chose us too. I discovered and made known matzah. I located, I found, I revealed, I exposed, I encountered, I experienced, I sought to reap the benefit of inspiring Dode, the beloved. Dode means the one who is loved and who loves in return. What does it say of Dode? This is the, I know we talk about the covenant and its family and its father, son, and all that is, I mean, that's the purpose of creation. But between now and the time that we are out exploring the universe and you know, we're celebrating eternity with Yahweh, what's the single most important thing we can do with our lives?
Come to know Yahweh and share what we learn.
Right. Work with Yah.
Yeah.
Yahweh's most effective co-worker of all time is Dode.
Oh, of course.
He's not Yahweh's only co-worker. Moshe was certainly a co-worker. That wasn't easy building that ark. Noah was a co-worker.
He's got 40 prophets.
Abraham.
Yahweh was a co-worker. You know, God's had a lot of co-workers. But to be called God's co-worker is a powerful thing. Yeah, that's a powerful thing. So that's half of it, is that's the best way we can spend our lives, is to work with Yah.
Mm-hmm.
But the second part of it is the realization that God does not work alone. God created the universe to enjoy the company of his children. And so he chooses to work through us. And that is an amazing realization, because it certainly slows God down. It's a lot easier if God were just to have blown up the Egyptians and said, okay, now that they're gone, let's just head off here
to the
promised land. But that's not what he does. He's not trying to impress us. He wants to work with us and live with us and enjoy our company. The best way he can do that is to enjoy working through us, which is what he does. So I had discovered and made known Dode, my co-worker. And then he says, out of my oil, that which sets apart, the dedicating the recipient to service. If it's Yahweh's oil, if it's that which Yahweh has the Shemin Kodesh Ani.
Mm-hmm.
If it is Yahweh's oil, are we talking about just run-of-the-mill olive oil?
No, we're talking anointing oil.
Well, it's not just anointing oil. It's Yahweh's.
It's Yahweh, yeah. Well, Yahweh,
yeah. I have Samuel to blend together. God is saying, I did this. This is... my secret ingredient. This is my doing here. That sets Dode up different than the rest of us. Unless you guys have experienced something I'm unaware of, we have not been anointed with.
No.
No. We are in the still recording, but not broadcasting period. But he's saying, out of my oil, which sets apart, dedicating the recipient to service, I anointed him. I anointed him. So, yes, we know that Dode was anointed three times, but God himself is saying, I anointed him. My guess is that if when God anoints you, you've been anointed, man. You know, anointed here is the basis of Mashiach. It's Mashach. It's without the Y. I applied the oil. I dedicated him for my purpose. The actual basis of the process of becoming the Mashiach. I anointed him. Such that to show the way to the relationship, my hand will be established and steadfast with you. Now, pronoun here is really important. God anointed Dode as his Messiah, chose him, found him, revealed him, exposed him, empowered him, strengthened him, such that he could serve as Yahweh's hand to show us the way to the relationship and thereby establish and strengthen us. So by coming to understand Dode, who he was, why Yahweh favored him, what he had to say, we are strengthened. We're established and strengthened by appreciating what Yahweh inspired Dode to do and to say and to write. By the way, you know, it's something we should think about from time to time. What did Yosha write?
Well, we have nothing other than
nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. What did a man who proved that his testimony was prophetic and therefore inspired by God have to say about him?
A lot.
Yes.
Well, Dode, a lot.
Yeah.
Yosha, nothing.
Yes.
The comparison is just so extreme here. In addition, my protective shepherd, Zeruah, my productive ram who shepherds the flock, who prevails because he is effective and strong and fully resolved with the overall ability to accomplish the mission, my remarkably important and impactful individual of action who is the leader and fighter, who is engaged as a shepherd among my sheep, who is fruitful in his way, especially when sowing the seeds of truth. Zeruah, from Zerah, to sow the seeds of truth while denoting and advancing the purpose of the arm of God, shall empower and embolden you, strengthening you. Dode serves us. He serves us. He strengthens us. He emboldens us. That's one of the things that I really like about Dode, is that because he was not perfect, and because God had set this enduring love for him, was so effective through him, we don't have to be perfect either. I'm emboldened by Yahweh's revelations of what he did through this man. I think Dode strengthens us. He emboldens us. And he is Yahweh's Zeruah. So I don't think God could have made this any easier for us. There is no need to interpret the text, to extrapolate, to speculate. The Bashar chosen one from among the people, the anointed Mashiach, Messiah, the Son of God, the man Yahweh raised and exalted to work with him, the very hand of God, his Zeruah, his protective shepherd, has a name. out. For those willing to listen, engage, his life and lyrics will Amet Ata help you grow, empowering and emboldening you. For God's sake and yours, if you haven't already done so, it's well past time that we accept and acknowledge Dode's special place in our lives and with God. That is what God is saying here. Dode should have a special place in our lives. If we want to be part of the covenant family, Dode should have a special place in our lives because he is the son of sons. He is the brother of brothers. He's the arm of God. He's the protective shepherd. We're not going to like the covenant if we don't like Dode. And we're going to love the covenant if we love him.
Mm-hmm.
And between now and then, when we have challenges, when we have obstacles to overcome, and Dode did and we do, well, it's what Dode has to say, what Yahweh inspired him to say, that are going to strengthen and embolden us. It's going to help us grow, Amet Ata, elevating our status, reinforcing us with the determination to persist and to be courageous.
Didn't you start this journey with a, what was it, the 91st Psalm in your pocket?
Who wrote it?
Dode.
So, Yeah. And talk about the promises. I wrote a book, actually two books, and did 5,000 radio shows under my own name, exposing and condemning Islam using the Islamic scriptures. And never once, ever had to lift a finger to protect myself. Countless numbers of death threats. Never did. Yeah, gave me the courage to do it.
That just doesn't happen in this world.
No, the courage to do it, the strength to do it, the protection. Bold, blunt. Now, speaking of bold and blunt, I want to share an admission, and I think I've now had three or four people say this. I may have mentioned in the last show, but I've had three or four people who have listened to recent interviews that I've done and the show and reading some of these books who said, oh my goodness, if we wonder if we were listening for the first time now, reading for the first time now, would we have gotten it? Would we have said, you know, this resonates, this is true, because where we are now is so far beyond where we were 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago, that there is the concern that it isn't that we've gone too far, it's that where we have gone is so far beyond where even some of the most open-minded and bright people are. Now, we have gone very, very far away from where most people live, where they exist.
Well, I think it doesn't appeal as much to Christians because it's so overwhelming. They would probably sit in there rolling their eyes and going, what is this? And may turn off unless they have a great desire to know. But I wonder how is it resonating with Yehudim. I would think it would be... there it would be go shouts for joy. Yes.
You know, I think that the combination that it's Dode and not Jesus, that God is giving them credit for being bright. Now listen, we know for certain that Yahweh reconciles his relationship with the remnant of Yisrael and Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
The clues suggest that it's 3,000 of one, 4,000 of the other. And, you know, I hope it's a lot more than that. But we know that's going to happen for certain. So we really don't have to worry about the fact, will there be enough people who are going to come to understand? frankly, the answer is, yeah. It's already, God's already acknowledged it's going to happen. So we don't need to sweat over it. And so part of it is, you know, I've never felt, I was asked today, you know, how many listeners do you have? I said, I don't know. You know, because these shows, the archives are 95% of the listenership, and the archives are all over the place. And so, you know, you could count the number who listen to the YouTubes that Steve has, the archives of the shows that you have, JB, the archives that blog and who listen live. And, you know.
And who cares?
And you don't know how many are listening all together.
Right. And you know something? That's right. I don't care. It's not even relevant.
If it's one person or if it's a million people.
Yes. Or if
what's funny is you're talking about the material we're talking about being not as approachable to a newcomer. Think about it in these terms. It took us, you know, 18 years, you know, some of us jumped on later and benefited from that a little bit, but yeah, 18 years to get to this. We don't have 18 years left.
No.
So if it's going to take you 18 years to get here, now's not the time to start.
You
kind of got to jump headlong into it at this point. You ain't got much time left.
That is correct.
You can't take the slow track anymore. We're in the fast lane.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the earlier material is all there. You can go and read yada yada from the beginning. You can read Questioning Paul. You can, you know, even Observations for Our Time doesn't start with this being blasted at the same time. Clearly, this new tome, which is coming home in our time, it does. But all that other material's there. Jump in wherever you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I do know that having given now Written in Stone, the short book is available at Amazon called Written in Stone. It's, you know, only 100 pages or so. I've now given it to, you know, probably 15 people. And I've not had a single person I've given it to come back and say, okay, I've now read through it and I get it and I want to turn and read more. Almost everyone says I get into it and you can just see that it's too much for them.
Yeah.
It's too intense.
Really?
Yeah, it's the shortest thing we ever wrote. Yeah, you think it's you know, it's the only thing we can ever summarize because it's Yahweh's summarization.
Yeah, it's Yahweh's summary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yahweh's top 10.
Yeah. Really?
Well,
that just blows me away.
I don't know. But I just know that Yisrael and Yahudah is smart. People are smart. There's a lot of, you know, 70% of Yehudim are not religious, at least of those who know they're Yehudim. We know now that there are people taking DNA tests around the world and are finding out that, you know, Arab Muslims, you're Jewish. And that so many Roman Catholics and people, there are probably as many Jews who don't know they're Jews as Jews who know they're Jews.
I believe that.
And the DNA is now making this obvious. And so there's a big audience out there. Yahweh will introduce himself to those that he wants, that he finds something about their personality that he enjoys. Obviously, he enjoyed Noah, and he enjoyed Moshe, and even with Moshe's reluctance, Yahweh enjoyed him. And he loves goat. So, and he's coming back with, you know, the guy that he chose to be his spokesperson in the end is Azalea. So it's not the dumbest idea in the world to look at what those guys were like, what their personality traits were, what they had to say, well, that's what God likes. Maybe it's a pretty good idea for me to be like what he likes, and he'll like me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good thinking.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
If you want to, if you choose to take that information and go, well, I don't like that, I don't want to be like that, well, it's your choice to make.
It is.
We don't want you around anyway. God don't want you around.
That's
but
right.
What's not to like about this? This is just mind-boggling wonderful.
It is wonderful. Yeah.
It doesn't have Christmas trees and pretty lights that we get to look at.
Yeah.
And gift-giving and family that we love. And that's all way more important than God.
Yeah. And it's just as it should be. All of it is just as it should be. And we were talking today over lunch and just going over all of the lies that has permeated Christianity since its very inception, and say, you know, it's just a shame that more people aren't interested in this, because the lies are just rubbish and the truth is magnificent. You know, the realization that Dode is whom Yahweh chose, that Dode is the Messiah, that Dode is the Son of God, that Dode is the King of Kings, that God's coming back with Dode, is actually the way it ought to be. God created the universe, and one of those souls in this universe got it right, told the world about it. It's the way it should be, and God embraced him. Used him as the example of what it means to be part of his covenant family, the benefits of being part of the covenant family. Yeah. And by the way, you know,
we were talking about the stress of growing up in a family with the, you know, what would Jesus do mentality. You know, trying to live and strive for this perfection. Yeah. You know, what would Dode do? There's a better one. It's a lot easier to be, you know, follow that than it is to be perfect.
Yeah, particularly since the guy made so many mistakes.
Yeah.
But his mistakes
were
right
in the end.
Yeah. What's interesting about Dode, and we have to be careful when we say he made so many mistakes. He did make a lot of mistakes. But all the mistakes Dode made were relative to his own life.
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
it comes to explaining who Yahweh is, to letting us know what he's offering and what he expects in return, and letting us know what's wrong with religion and politics and human institutions, and particularly with Christianity, Dode is universally right. When it comes to his Psalms, he is universally right. So what it says is that to the degree that we appreciate what Dode wrote and what he had to say about God, once we are acceptance, we accept, we understand, we process that, then we will be correct with God, even if we make some dumb decisions relative to other things. Like the mistake that I made on Matanya, and the fact that the Gospel of Matthew is 90% not just rubbish, but counterproductive. My mistake. But that mistake doesn't change in any way, shape, or form my translations of Yahweh's words or insights derived from them. And as a matter of fact, the only thing that I focused on in Matanyah anyway was the Sermon on the Mount, and it's true.
I was going to say that. Yes, that's where you usually talk. That's about all you really talk about when it comes to Matanyah, or what we used to call Matanyah, now Loi.
Yeah.
It's the Sermon on the Mount, or the his speech on the mountain. Yeah.
And it was written in Hebrew, and it is accurate.
Yeah. So.
And we'll explain to everybody why, but we can make a mistake. You know, I've made my share, and my life made a lot of bad ones. And God's not here to bail us out of our personal mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, that's not.
He made that clear with Dode. Dode suffered consequences for his choices.
As do
boy,
we
did
all.
He. Yeah, boy, did he ever. Yeah. No, Dode didn't get a free ride. You know, so we can, as you say, if we can, what would Doe do? We can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that. And you know what?
He's an example we can follow. I can't follow Yahusha. I can't be the Passover lamb. I literally am incapable of doing that.
You know, I was in this chapter, I was just ripping apart that line in Matthew and Yah, where the Gospel of Matthew, I would stop using Matthew, yeah, the Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus says, pick up your cross and follow me, unless you give up your life for me and all that sort of thing. What in the world were we thinking? I mean, how in the world would God be saying, I want you to pick up my cross? First of all, at that point, they had no idea that crucifixion was in the cards. And so he's just going to throw this out to him and say, yeah, maybe pick up your cross. You should be crucified along with me. I'm going to suffer as the Passover lamb. Why don't we just all suffer as the Passover lamb?
Yeah, we can start by flogging ourselves while we're at it.
There are idiots that do that.
I know. That was my reference.
We really ought to think it through before we say, no. No, he did not say that.
He quoted Dode. Maybe
Greek
we should
text
quote Dode.
Pointless. The only use of the Greek text is to condemn the religion of Christianity and prove it wrong using its own words. Outside of
that,
the Greek text is absolutely useless.
Yeah. And while I do think that there's a lot in Yahu Kanan that to the degree that we can roll back all of the copy edits and we can get out of the Greek and into Hebrew. You know, I was reading it a couple of days ago, and there's a lot in it that really does have some merit and interesting insights. And I mean, I enjoy it. I must tell you, I really do enjoy it. But when you turn to Revelation, almost everything in Revelation that is of any value in terms of prophecy is in Yirmiyah, is in Yeshayah, is in Ezekiel, is in Zechariah, is in Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when we're talking about riding white, in fact, one of the things I find, you know, this whole thing where Christian says, oh, Jesus is going to come in riding a white horse. No,
he's not.
First of all, he rides donkeys, not horses. But you're going to ride this white horse, his clothes are going to be soaked in blood, and, you know, and he's going to do this warrior thing, and he's going to be king of kings. And guess what? It is true. It's just that it happens to be dope. But it is true.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Isn't it? So, you know, I think there are some merit. Whether or not Shimon, that was an eye-opener for me, too. Shimon, I've always called him Shimon Kefesh. Wrong I was on that one. I had relied on the lexicons, and they said, well, he was named Kefesh because it's the Aramaic word for rock. No, it isn't. Well, it might be the Aramaic word for rock, but kef is the Hebrew word. And what it means is, you know, there's the indentations, if you take a rock and you look at the kind of the porous holes in it, you know, rocks are not polished typically. They've got little porous pits in them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, kef is the pits or the holes, the indentations in a rock. Or it's from kafar, which is to reconcile. So he could have called him Shimon,
the reconciler.
Or Shimon, you know.
The flawed rock.
That all you really are is the holes in the rock, the voids in the rock. So I think it's actually from that I think everybody got it wrong in terms of it's the rock, and therefore they translated rock to the Greek word for rock, And then Peter is a transliteration of the Greek word for rock, which was the translation of the Hebrew word. And for indentations in a rock, I actually think it's from Kephar, which is the basis of Yom Kippurim.
Hmm.
And I think it's about reconciliation. But anyway, it's one of the, you know, there's just so much if you take the time to learn. I was reading a Christian site on is it Matthew or is it Levi? And this Christian said, oh, it's no problem at all. The answer is really simple. Matthew is the Greek name and Levi is the Hebrew name, and he was a a tax collector taxing the Hebrews on behalf of the Greeks.
Yeah.
And you say, no, you idiot.
Do you understand how language works?
Yeah, and he said it's the same as his name, you know, Peter. It's Peter, which is the Greek name, and Simon is the Hebrew name, and he's Simon Peter. And he go, no, his name is Shimon.
You are an idiot, and anyone who reads what you write is dumber for having read it.
Yeah, it means he listens. And then I was going to say, and Kephish is simply the Aramaic word for rock. And so it became the Greek translation and a transliteration of the Greek. That's how that came into being. But I said, you know, I don't think there's something wrong about that. I don't think there's any chance that Yosha is going to apply an Aramaic pet name.
Mm-hmm.
To Shimon. So I said, you know, I better look this up because this doesn't feel right. And there it was. It's a Hebrew word. So that's how I came upon it. I was trying to deal with, you know, how do Christians deal with this? You know, because Luke and
they don't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then in this chapter, I compare the two accounts between Mark, of which the Gospel of Matthew is based, and what Mark said about the experience before Pilate and what is in the Gospel of Matthew. And they just are so in conflict that somebody along the way should have said, you know, this can't be the inerrant word of God because they don't say the same thing.
I'm sure someone did. They were called a heretic and burned at the stake.
Well, yeah, then they burned him at the stake, so that's probably not a...
Yeah, this idea of the Romans...
They were written out of history.
I find him completely innocent. I'm going to wash my hands of all of this, but between now and then, I'm going to go have him flogged and then crucified. But I find him innocent. I'm going to wash my whole hands of this, but I'm going to go have him flogged and crucified anyway. Say what?
Yeah, that's a good section. That's a really good section there, that part.
There's a reason there are so many rational people who are agnostic and atheist.
Yeah.
More agnostic. You have to be irrational to be atheist. But you look at so much of the inconsistencies within all of it. It's just how anyone can believe it. Yeah, without even not even knowing the truth, how you can believe any of that, I don't get. I never have.
Yep, I don't get it. It's so obvious that it's untrue. In fact, those accounts of what happened before Pilate are so out of character for Rome, so out of character for Pilate, so out of character for the Jews, so impossible in just like if you were to say, okay, let's make this a play. It would be like, in Star Wars in the third episode where you have the conversion scene and Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader, and you just say, come on, Lucas, if that's the best you could do, how in the world did you make these movies? Because that's so out of character. That dialogue never could have occurred. And you look at these things and you read it with an open mind, with just say, oh, no way.
it's impossible.
If this was put out as a book of fiction today, people would reject it.
Oh, of course. The dialogue is just absurd. Every character is out of character. So, anyway, we're about ready. We're 1 minute, well, seconds from being cut off. So, happy Shabbat. Look forward to being with you next week.
Shabbat shalom.
Goodbye, shalom, y'all.
Night.
Bye.
Night.